coming up next is Technology Bites. Thank you.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings, and welcome to tonight's staticky edition of Technology Bites. We're going back into the past to radio of the 50s.
And all the ships at sea. That's not the 50s, that's actually probably before then.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America.
The alien craft seems to have crashed in the farm field. All right, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And that's it.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. House.
How are we going to take calls tonight?
I guess we'll just have to put that on hold.
This will be a very, very different show than normal.
Yes. What are we going to do with that Groove House hole in the show that he usually fills?
It sounds so dirty when you say it that way.
Cuckoo.
Oh, I see. We got
hole
that covered.
Filled.
What we're going to do.
Well, it's good to be back home, eh? I'm glad to. I'm not really glad.
Don't
to
lie,
home.
Jay.
It's hot here.
You know.
It's hot
what was? So what was? Where were you? And what was the weather like?
I was in Newfoundland and Nova Scotia.
I hear they just found it.
No, not that long ago.
They did just find a new Viking archaeological site in the south of Newfoundland. They have the one in the north that they found.
Well, that's pretty cool, eh?
It is cool, eh? Hey. And. So, yeah, I was in Canada, or Kanekistan, as Lee likes to call it. And
how about that Canada, eh?
Not that long ago, I was sitting on a boat, wearing a coat, with an iceberg off my shoulder, drinking an iceberg beer from a local brewery in Newfoundland made from iceberg water.
You had a berg on your shoulder? A little chip on the shoulder there?
I got an iceberg on my shoulder.
And the irony is, now that you're back, they're going to open a Newfoundland land just outside of Katy.
Newfoundland land.
No, now that I'm back, I know what's causing the ever larger chunks of glacier to break off.
Beer?
Yeah.
Brewery?
They're not harvest. They don't actually. They don't harvest it that way. They harvest it from. They don't go up to the big icebergs. When the icebergs, there's three different classifications of icebergs. There's four or five. Well, there's icebergs,
right,
which are the big ones, and then
I've heard about those.
The medium ones are called growlers.
Oh, like for the beer.
Yeah, well,
like when you go and get beer.
Oh,
from
get a growler of iceberg beer.
Got a growler, and then oh no. So
Slimer.
So Flicknet has just gifted us.
He made good on his promise to bring Ecto Cooler.
Simulated sounds of cans opening in the studio.
Ecto Cooler. So is it slimy? No.
It is green. It's antifreeze green.
Oh, God.
Just like I remember it.
Yep. Well, it's not in a juice box, though. That would be
they sell them in juice boxes.
That would make it even more better.
But I actually wanted the cans.
So, everyone, the slime.
Post slime.
No, it was Canada was awesome. I will say that the Canadian people, is it terrible?
No, it's just like mainlining sugar.
Just like you know,
just like
from
your
the
mom
80s.
Used to
just
make.
Like mom ghost used to make. Back in the old ghost home. Pete, it's too bad you can't be here to see this and get diabetes with us. My God, this is the greenest thing I've ever put in my face.
I just went
like, this is like the base of Four Loko, isn't it?
It's not even like it's like seriously green. Like
it's pretty much, antifreeze.
You can't see into the cup. It's like not
it's
translucent.
It's like fluorescent green.
It is green. Is green as hell. That's not all I can say.
It's about the greenest thing I've ever drank.
Wow! I can't wait till later.
Wow. This is going to be a high-energy show tonight as we all are amped up on kindergarten levels of sugar here.
Well, hopefully tomorrow you'll have a drug test so you can fill a cup.
I'm pretty sure anything that I pee tomorrow is
pea green soup.
You're ghost busted.
So funky.
That's not even funny. We're all amped up on sugar now, so it's
the can says that it's 10% juice. That's great.
10%
sugar juice.
Yeah.
It is a blend of orange and tangerine juices from concentrates and other ingredients. I didn't shake it.
So have we done our part now to promote the new Ghostbusters movie?
No, we are not in any way promoting the new movie.
No,
we're just drinking.
So the can, I mean, so I brought the can to y'all and I'd kept it in the fridge. So it's actually a temperature activated can. So the big high C right now is green. Uh-huh. But as it gets warm, it will turn back to kind of a yellow color. And also, the bottom of the slime will also turn back to yellow color.
So it does.
Yeah, so temperature activated just like whoever that beer is that makes, the mountains, Rocky Mountains.
It's Coors, baby. It's the beer of kings or something.
Banquet beer? Is that it?
Oh,
yeah. God.
Okay, wait, I'm looking at the ingredients. It is obviously the first ingredient is filtered water. I mean, because it is a liquid. But I'll give you two guesses, and the first one doesn't count as to what the second ingredient
ectoplasm.
Is. Ectoplasm? No, actually, okay, first guess didn't count. What do you think the second ingredient is, and it's not ectoplasm?
HFCS.
HFCS,
high fructose ectoplasm. High fructose ectoplasm.
It's basically green sugar water with industrial fruit flavor.
But it's an awesome green.
It is so green. It's ridiculously green.
I took a picture of it, and I've got, I could be on one of those ghost hunting shows.
Oh, hey, there's a ghost in the picture.
There's a ghost in my picture.
Is. You should tweet that.
I'm going to tweet that.
Bookface it, or put it on your Snaptograms. whatever the teens are using these days, put it on there, Jay.
I'm going to poke Mongo.
You should
Mongo
you should.
Just a pawn in Game of Life.
Game of Life.
You should snap talk it.
You should Slack it to Twitter
or Twitch chat it. One sec.
Put it in, post it in IRC and Ben Hex. So
anyway, welcome to Technology Bytes.
Quick
we
graphic.
Invite you to go to our website at geekradio.com so you can listen. There are 3 Jay Lee free episodes available for download. From the
one
podcast.
Jay Lee Lee free episode.
Yeah, no Lees at all. First or last.
Lee free, free
Lee
one
free.
Lee free.
The middle
Lee
one
free.
In there.
Lilu.
Okay, I gotta stop drinking this.
Yes, it's novel
dying.
To look at, interesting to sip, but now I'm looking for a place to dispose.
I feel
put
wrong.
It right here.
Actually, Actually, okay, so it says there's only 150 calories per can. I'm looking at the front of it here.
If you're serving, and there are 18 servings per can.
No, it says per can.
No, you are right.
If you still have
But they mean literally the can.
No, when it warms, when it warms up, it goes to 1,500. That extra zero comes on.
When it's metabolized by your body, it becomes 10,000.
I say if you've got extra in the can, you know, the... I forgot his name. The guy here.
The ghost guy?
That runs the...
guy who sold it to you out of his white
van?
The
equipment.
Groovehouse. Flicted.
No, not on our
Flicted
show.
Flicted runs the equipment.
At the station.
Oh.
That one guy?
Station. That guy.
Station. The guy that we just saw?
Yeah.
The guy that's probably listening to us not being able to remember his name right now.
Bob.
It's great. We're going to be off the air now. It's going to be your fault. Bob. You pull
Bob's
the switch.
Different.
Not Bob. Not that Bob.
Not smiling Bob.
Not smiling Bob. Not that this guy doesn't smile.
I don't even know what you're talking about. Is there a story
Mr.
here?
Mr. Robot.
Engineer.
Yeah, I know you're
No, I'm just not. Saying, if you have some extra, he might want it.
Well, I haven't put my tongue all over the can yet. So
that's what I'm saying.
Okay, all right. That's good. He can join our sugar crusade.
Now, is this rare or something, or is it just...
Well, they brought it back for the
It existed
the
before.
It existed back in the 80s, and
but
it was
not
popular
marketed
kids.
As Ghostbusters.
But it went. No, it was Ecto-Cooler.
Used to have, well, it's still, I don't see Slimer on it anymore.
But
it
died in like 95, I think, is when they took it off the market.
Yeah,
and so it hasn't been, it's been over 20 years, I think, since it's been available. And they brought it back for, and it's
limited. These are the original juice, right, from that.
No.
They pulled it out of the warehouse.
These are new.
It used to be the screen.
But it's supposedly a limited release. I mean, but the thing is, it's been so popular that everybody who has it runs out of it as soon as they get it in stock and make it available. So
you got like four cases.
I got four cases.
Yeah.
that was the limit. I don't know that I really needed four cases. I'm like, look, I'm already buying a case. I'm already going to have to pay shipping on it. Might as well just go ahead and buy the limit.
Take it.
You
to
just
the
wanted
limit.
To be prepared for the gritty reboot of Ghostbusters in about 15 more years. Maybe do it. A remake loosely based on the current one that's coming out.
All right, I want to be careful on the whole Ghostbusters topic here.
So what you're saying is you want to talk about Gamergate.
No. But I would like to make an observation. Okay.
Is the observation that busting makes you feel good?
I would like to cross the streams here just for a moment. No, okay, so...
Are you the gatekeeper?
Keymaster.
So, okay. So anyway, there is a kerfuffle.
There's
a kerfuffle, if you will, about the fact that Ghostbusters has been remade at all, but especially that it's been remade with female characters replacing the male characters. And there are people of, you know, mixed feelings about that being an okay thing, you know. So a lot of male justice warriors or whatever. What is the MAs?
I don't know.
Anyway, there's what? This whole like man thing.
MRAs,
going on.
Men's Rights
Act. Men's Rights Act, MRAs.
Oh, okay.
Not to be confused with MREs, which are men ready to eat.
men are getting upset that it's
yes, there's a whole like we must make this movie fail. The same thing kind of happened with Mad Max, you know, because the female character was a strong female lead. So MRAs are a little been out of shape about the whole Ghostbusters
maybe
thing.
They should man up a little bit and just get over it.
Yeah, just saying, guys. They're just producing more male tears.
Well, but what I hear, the difference is that Mad Max was an excellent movie, whereas
Ghostbusters probably sucks. But if you're a man and you say it sucks, then you could be like, you know, judged harshly. So here's what I noticed. I want to just point this out because I thought it was interesting. There's a lot of commercials like Papa's Pizza and the Progressive Insurance commercials are Ghostbuster themed.
Really?
Yes, they're having Ghostbuster themed commercials. What's interesting is though that everybody I've seen, so I've seen that those two commercials are the only ones I've seen, and I want to look for more, but in the two commercials I've seen, the person wearing a Ghostbuster suit was a man.
What?
There were no actual...
What about Flo on the Progressive commercial?
She was a ghost.
Oh.
She was
it a, was it a white man?
Yes.
Hmm.
So it was just interesting that maybe the people who are willing to, you know, sponsor the movie have stepped away from what could have been controversial by putting the women from the movie into the act or having
a
woman just...
Man-washing it. That's not,
they are
bear
worms,
right?
They kind of are. I kind of think that's what's happening. I mean, maybe I'm just way off base, but that's what I think is happening.
I don't care either way on who they cast to play the ghost, but here's the deal. I do always feel with things like this that the remake is going to be tough, and you know, with, I feel like we're still in that weird CGI phase where it could just be, I don't know, I'm going to reserve judgment, but I see how it could be a little over the top.
I don't think the movie's going to be very good, but it's not because...
It's not because of the female cast.
And, you know, but I do understand, too, that there's a sense of... that movie was important to people our age. It's been important to... The original Ghostbusters was important to the geek culture. And just having it remade at all just bothers me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just wish that... There was no need to reboot that movie whatsoever. It'd be like...
It'd be like remaking Porky's with all women driving the cars.
Yes.
You know, I would watch that. That would be interesting.
Driving the cars? What?
I don't know. I don't know that I ever actually saw Porky's.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? It
would have been in the men's room instead of the ladies'
right.
room.
I think I'm mixing Porky's and
Days of Thunder.
What was that movie that Spielberg did?
E.T.?
No. Before
Jaws.
That, before that.
Raiders
Dark
of the
Star.
No, before that.
Not before Dark Star. Oh, the Exode 4210?
No, that's Lucas.
That was Lucas.
Maybe it was Lucas.
I don't know. What,
what
it
movie?
It was one of those guys.
Give me some more. What happened?
I don't know.
This
guy's in cars racing around and set in the 50s or whatever.
Oh, Thunderball.
Oh, no.
One of them gets the axle pulled off of their car.
Gumball Rally.
You're thinking
Mad
American
Mac.
Graffiti.
Yes,
American Graffiti.
Oh,
there we go.
Wow.
Thank you, Pete.
So who directed American Graffiti?
Lucas. George Lucas.
Okay.
George
Lucas.
Was it Lucas?
One of them.
Yeah, because that's where he found Han Solo.
That was why he got the money to make Star Wars, or how he could have enough credibility to get.
Yeah, so somehow I combined that movie and Porky's. I've never actually.
So the Millennium
Falcon
is a T-Bird?
I don't think I've ever seen either one of those.
What's an Aluminum Falcon?
What's a Millennium Falcon? Death Star blown up.
Call
by a
for
bunch
Papa.
Of teenagers.
Yeah, go for Papa Palpatine. You saw that with me. You know what I'm talking about. No, it's the robot chicken. Yeah, robot chicken doing the thing where he's ordering lunch and he's talking to Vader. He's like, been flying around on that thing for 2 weeks. He must have been like,
yeah. Tuna fish, I guess. I always order the wrong thing.
Cherry Coke.
All right, so anyway, geekradio.com.
That is the best scene.
I love you.
And if you are at all interested in the trip to Canada, it's all on my blog at baldheretic.com, all the photos that were worth printing up, day-by-day account. It was a great trip. I enjoyed being there. The Canadians are very nice and very, very pleasant, warm people. They feel that we Americans are more to be pitied than
Yeah, now what was
shunned.
What was the saying? Didn't someone bring up politics? And
Mr. Clinton. I mean, Mr. Trump or Mrs. Clinton. What a pickle.
That's a nice way of putting it.
It's just like that knowing kind of like, smile, frown, nod towards you.
Yes, it is a pickle.
All right, so anyway, this is Technology Bites. We're going to be with you until 10 o'clock tonight. We're going to be jumping off the walls and bouncing around. But first, before any of that happens, we're going to hand the reins of the show over to Peter Hughes in San Antonio and do the Technology Bites Info Bark Shot. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
So Nintendo's seemingly unstoppable mobile hit has reached a new milestone. You know, just in case crashing your car while playing Pokemon Go or getting hit by a car crossing a street while playing Pokemon Go wasn't a big enough milestone. Apparently, iPhone users, at least, are spending more time playing Pokemon Go than they do browsing Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter, or Instagram, according to a new report. The thing about it is, these stats, that may sound like some staggering numbers. You know, they were 33 minutes playing Pokemon Go compared to 22 minutes on Facebook and 18 minutes on Snapchat, according to Sensor Tower's research. But they only looked at usage on a single day, Monday, June 11th, just days after the official release. So, plus the amount of time is not like that, you know, a little over half an hour, not that big a deal. Apparently Candy Crush, though, people played on average of 43 minutes a day when it kind of peaked out. And Game of War players average close to 2 hours of gameplay a day. It's just there's not as many of them. Let's see. And there's all kinds of different stuff going on a wide variety of things. We've mentioned that the FCC has been talking about 5G. Tomorrow morning, the five chair people of the Federal Communications Commission are expected to take their seats behind a long wooden table and vote on a foundation for how 5G is going to come about. I may sound a little dry, but consider the obvious. Everybody wants richer, better content on your mobile devices, and everybody wants faster speeds. There is room to grow within existing LTE and LTE Advanced networks, but the push for fifth generation wireless tech is a push for a future with faster data speeds, less latency, and coverage for more people. And beyond smartphones, this could be a way to connect the Internet of Things and also power mass augmented reality experiences. Who doesn't want that? So we'll hear more about it tomorrow at 10:30 Eastern time. So you can on all the articles and all the stuff we talk about on the show that's based on online sources, you can find links to all of those at geekradio.com, or they also appear on our Facebook page. So if you want to read more, there's more information on that on all these stories than maybe fits into the info shot. And did you celebrate Prime Day? And no, it wasn't some kind of George Lucas summer festival, Star Wars special that he wants to hide and bury. It was basically Amazon having a giant sale that they say is supposed to rival Black Friday, I think, from around Thanksgiving. Amazon does claim its second annual Prime Day was its biggest sales day ever. But shopping cart glitches and less than mind-blowing sales estimates deflated high expectations for a holiday that the world's largest retailer made up simply because it could. The company said that orders for that sale, open only to Prime members, rose 60% worldwide and 50% in the U.S. on Tuesday compared to Prime Day 2015. The big thing that they sold a lot of apparently was Amazon devices, and that's because those were discounted pretty heavily. So there's that. If you didn't celebrate it or look at it, I looked at it. I didn't see anything that was like compelling to buy. So I didn't. And in other Amazon news, apparently a lot of Amazon sellers are unhappy. They were not celebrating Prime Day. There's a problem now, according to, there was an article on CNBC or a story on CNBC, that apparently, Chinese counterfeits are starting to infect Amazon. Basically any kind of creative, piece that gets on Amazon, can be copied by mostly Chinese knockoffs that undercut them on price, and then they jump in the seller ranks by obtaining scores of reviews that the watchdog site FakeSpot.com determined that were inauthentic or harmful for real consumers. So a lot of businesses, a lot of small businesses have been driven out by the counterfeiting, and apparently it has exploded this year, sellers say, following Amazon's efforts to openly court Chinese manufacturers, weaving them intimately into the company's expansive logistics operation. Merchants are perpetually unsure of who or what may kill their sales on any given day and how much time they'll have to spend hunting down fakers. So in May, CNBC.com reported on a Facebook group now consisting of over 600 people whose members have seen their designs for T-shirts, coffee mugs, and iPhone cases show up on Amazon at a fraction of the price of the originals. The designers described it as a game of whack-a-mole where fakes pop up more quickly than they're taken down. But it's not like the, white van or the guy, on a side street with a card table. Apparently it's right there on Amazon and getting worse. So there's one to watch for. We'll keep an eye on that story going forward. And then bugs. There's always bugs. But this one, the thing about them is that you keep thinking that maybe we've like run out of the really big, spread across multiple versions of software and, running on millions and millions of machines all around the world. Well, a 20-year-old Windows bug lets printers install malware. And apparently for more than two decades, Microsoft Windows has provided the means for clever attackers to install malware of their choice on computers that connect to booby-trapped printers or other devices masquerading as printers on a local area network. Apparently, this was finally addressed on Tuesday during the monthly patch cycle. So if you have Windows, you want to you definitely want to get this past the, you know, this this week's patch and install it so that you're not vulnerable. Apparently, the vulnerability resides in the Windows Print Spooler, which manages the process of connecting to available printers and printing documents. A protocol known as Point and Print allows people who are connecting to a network-hosted printer for the first time to automatically download the necessary driver immediately before using it. It works by storing a shared driver on the printer or print server and eliminates the hassle of the user having to manually download and install it. The thing about it is researchers with Vector Networks, a security firm, discovered the Windows Print Spooler doesn't properly authenticate print drivers when installing them from remote locations. The failure makes it possible for attackers to use several different techniques to deliver maliciously modified drivers instead of the legitimate one provided by the printer maker. Effectively turns printers, printer servers, or potentially any network-connected device masquerading as a printer into an internal drive-by exploit kit that infects machines whenever they connect. Isn't that nice? One of the methods, according to security expert H.D. Moore, who's principal at a firm called Special Circumstances, he told Ars Technica, that one method is to connect a laptop or other portable device that falsely advertises itself as a network printer. When people in the same network connect to it, the device can be set up to automatically deliver the booby-trapped driver. Another approach is to monitor traffic set to a legitimate network printer and wait for a victim to add the printer to their system. The attacker would then hijack the request for the printer drivers and respond with a malicious one. So, this kind of man-in-the-middle attack can be done over open Wi-Fi or using ARP spoofing over wired networks, according to Moore. It should be possible to tweak open-source MITM tools like BetterCap to accomplish this. So it's not just, you know, don't just think that you're covered because you're inside a corporate network or any of those kinds of things. There's ways to get this in, and there's ways to use it. So if you got Windows, probably you should think about, and you have enough machines that anybody would want to exploit them, you probably want to think about patching that boy. And here's one with where I don't know, I guess the good guys kind of win, but a CC licensed photo that was incorrectly used in an Italian festival's promotional materials has led to a public apology and the reimbursement of legal costs. For people who, you know, basically somebody the festival lifted photos of a particular participant in the festival that had been uploaded to Wikimedia Commons under the Creative Commons license. The thing about it is that allows the image to be used freely for any purpose on the condition that it includes attribution and releases it under the same or a similar license. But the festival didn't do that in their publicity stuff, and so they got burned. Usually it doesn't result that, you know, usually it seems like the best that someone can get is them to take down the image. But this time the photographer got some compensation, at least for his legal fees. So that was one interesting one. And then in other legal stuff, this is a first. On Tuesday, a U.S. federal judge in New York delivered a crucial rebuke to the government's warrantless use of stingrays. You remember those? Those are the kind of fake cell systems that the police have been using and that they've been working very hard to keep mention of out of the courts and keep them from having any rulings about them. And this time they, I guess, didn't do it right. In a 14-page opinion, the judge ruled that the government could not use its stingray to locate a drug suspect asleep in his apartment. As a result of the ruling, the judge suppressed the evidence found in the man's bedroom, a kilogram of cocaine, likely effectively ending the case. In March 2016, a state appeals court in Maryland reached a similar finding, but this is believed to be the first federal ruling of its kind. So the deal is, you know, stingrays, can determine a mobile phone's location by spoofing a cell tower. In some cases, stingrays can intercept calls and text messages. Once deployed, the devices intercept data from a target phone along with information from all the other phones that connect up to it within the vicinity. At times, police have falsely claimed the use of a confidential informant when they actually have been using stingrays, which are particularly sweeping and intrusive surveillance tools. So it's starting to catch attention, and apparently it's not holding up well with the courts. So I think overall that's probably good news. When they use a stingray without a warrant, that doesn't seem to be kosher or legit or any of that stuff. And then, there's been a lot of talk about global warming. According to a report from the Energy Information Administration, the world is getting better at using energy to power its economic activity. In other words, the amount of energy that we need to produce stuff to make the economy work is getting less per unit of gross domestic product created. So that means it's called global energy intensity. So it's kind of how much power do you have to generate and use to make economies go. And that number apparently is dropping, on average is dropping. And so that's good news, because if you need less energy, you need fewer places to produce it. And it makes it, basically you can, use renewables or use fewer plants that pollute to cover the power. And then last couple stories, this one, Google Fiber, and hopefully they will, may they roll out all over the place and affect pricing. If you've ever gotten internet access for a business, commercial internet access, they really are really, really proud of their internet access. Apparently it's like diamond packets, because when they charge a company for internet, they charge out the wazoo, I think is the technical term. So Google has now set up three new plans for small to large business clients. And so the important part about this is the sort of speeds and the price for the speeds. The plans start at $70 for 100 megabits per second upload and download, both symmetrical. Then it goes to $100 for 250 megabits per second and $250 for basically gigabit. They've also increased the number of static IP addresses a business can have up to 13. Small businesses that are eligible for these plans, like those in this particular case was in Charlotte, can go ahead and sign up for new plans. But if you're not located there, you can check and see Google's list of upcoming fiber areas to see when it might be coming to you. Small business owners in like Kansas City, Provo, Utah, Austin, here in Texas, and Nashville, Tennessee can sign up until July 31st as part of the early access program for Google Fiber. And then starting on August 1st, they can take advantage of the pricing for a year or one of the new plans available to them. So, the best part is going to be seeing how that affects the pricing of competitive internet plans. Because I know that what I've seen around to get to 100 megabits per second is hundreds of dollars in a lot of places for businesses. Not for people at home, but for businesses. They really nail them. And so it's nice to see Google stepping up with better data prices for small businesses. And finally, and this one, okay, there's, I guess by its nature, there might be some spoilers, and I invite the panel to join in on the discussion of this particular story. This is from Wired News. What to expect from Mr. Robot Season 2? And the headline says, hint, lots of Easter eggs. Because tonight is the premiere of the highly anticipated season 2 of Mr. Robot. Just some background stuff. The unusual show struck a chord with audiences last summer and garnered immediate praise from critics and even stole a Gold Globe from Game of Thrones. It's what happens after the events of the first season, which, you know, the second season is starting, so I think maybe we're getting to where, you know, if there are inadvertent spoilers, I'm sorry, but, you know, you did have your chance before
some
now.
Some of this stuff is, I'm sorry. Sorry, Pete.
Go ahead. You there?
Afflicted's awesome for several reasons, but the most latest reason, actually the most latest reason is
the
Ecto Cooler.
Yeah.
But before that, I get a text or a message saying like, hey, Mr. Robot, the first episode is on. And was that Thursday or Wednesday or when? What was it, Friday?
No, it was
just a few days
Sunday.
Ago. Was it Sunday?
Saturday or Sunday.
Oh, it was Sunday. It was Sunday because they started around 7 o'clock or so. So like four different social networks, they started doing live streaming and put them out there. So I caught the third one and was able to cast some of it and watch it. So what I saw was pretty good.
Yeah, so I just happened to see on Facebook, because I follow Mr. Robot account, and I just happened to see that they listed that they were going to be doing a live a Facebook live stream with interviews with some of the cast members talking about season two. So it was like a few minutes until then. I was like, oh, I have to remember to watch that. And so I forgot. And then, you know, five or six minutes into it, I was like, oh man, I was going to watch that. So I started watching it.
Then,
sorry, I'm gonna sneeze.
I was just gonna say, and then you were
afflicted. Cut out at 8:35.
So I started watching it, and it was interesting. But they were talking about like, what's the hardest thing for you? Was season two more difficult emotionally to deal with your character, and how much, you know, they change because there's a lot of changes in the characters from season one to season two because of things they've been through. And so, I mean, it was a real interview with people talking, and then, yeah, about 22 minutes in, all of a sudden the screen glitched, and Mr. Moneybag showed up, and he was just like,
blah, blah, blah,
blah, blah, blah. It's all stuff we've already heard. Who cares about this crap? We're F Society. You're F Society. Now we're going to show you something you've never seen, and they started part one, and at first I was like, what are they doing? Okay, I've seen the other one where they showed, like, this beginning, like it's the first minute and a half or whatever in the arcade, and then it kept going after that, and I was like, oh no, just a second, like I think they're gonna play the whole episode. And so I just said,
isn't
yeah,
it
I watched
2 hour
it.
Premiere or is it was it an
yeah
hour?
This was it's two parts, it's 2 1-hour with commercials, so this was probably clocked in around 41-42 minutes because there were no commercials, but it was just part one, it wasn't part one and two. So it'll be the first hour of the 2 hour premiere tonight.
Nice.
That's what people are watching right now instead of listening to us.
That's why no one's calling in.
I think it starts at 9.
Except
that's why Groovehouse isn't here, because he's been the biggest Mr. Robot fan in the
he said he threw out his hack, right? Or was that his back? Might have been his hack.
Oh, is that the real reason Groovehouse is staying home?
Yeah. He hacked you.
And then,
social engineering.
And then Barrett was upset because Groovehouse stole his reasoning.
I know. I was supposed to be the one at home in bed watching Mr. Robot.
Well, next week you can watch the second episode. We're preempted just in case people.
It's true.
So we're not doing both episodes tonight. It's not a 2 hour premiere.
Our show is preempted.
No, I know
week.
That, but tonight,
but tonight
are 2 hours.
Tonight is 2 hours.
Yes,
that's
there's
what
still
I was
one saying. More hour tonight.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, okay. So it's 9 to 10 is part 1, 10 to 11 is part 2.
So you can
I'm assuming.
Run home.
I'm leaving at 9:58 on the dot. We're wrapping this show. All right.
We're going to have a special extended edition of Weird Science at the end of the show.
It's just Pete. Goes
right up to the end of the...
It's just Pete, and then, like, you can hear a TV show in the background. And
motorcycles,
Pete
yeah.
trails off from time off to time.
Or it just plays the bumper for it on an endless loop.
A lot of people do, like, reaction videos. Like, let's watch this video of someone else watching a video. We should do reaction radio. Y'all should, you know, we'll just listen to us watching a TV show. That's awesome. Okay.
Pass the popcorn.
But without any sound from the TV.
Roll dice to see if I'm getting drunk.
Yeah, you are. Are there any girls there?
I run in map.
Into the dark. No, into the darkness.
I ping the darkness.
No, you gotta roll a perception check to see if you remember the command line options of in map that you want, or if you have to like
take an extra turn. Capital S T little M N O P. We'll just do the whole thing. We'll do fingerprinting.
Christmas tree that thing.
Cut and paste whatever the website tells me to do.
Yeah, we don't even know. Let's just run.
If anybody kisses
runs in map.
If anybody kisses their sister, you have to drink.
You rolled a one, and now you have to sacrifice a turn to read the man page to try to find out what you were doing.
No.
I don't think I've ever actually run in map without having to like either go to the man page or go to
like
or
go, Google like, search
yeah,
for
Google
some
something
like
good, how do
good
I,
page.
How do I in map? I don't remember.
I've got an in map alias file where it's just nm underscore and then what I want to do, and I run those aliases, and I don't have to know. And some of these are pretty long and complicated.
NM
like
hack.
Nm underscore, like, you know, stealth scan, nm FOS, fingerprint OS.
What
you know,
IP?
NM.
What host name are you scanning?
No, I mean, this is no. When we do this, we're not just scanning the net. Usually, it is, you know, we're scanning our own servers to make sure that we're
sure
cool
you
and
are.
Stuff. Or we've lost a server. Like, hey, where'd that IP address go? Where'd that machine go? Or who's running this? Or who's
or
running?
Or you think you're scanning a server and you typoed the IP block and you're actually scanning somebody else's.
Yeah, our
servers.
We're scanning 0.0.0.0. It's fine.
To 255. Yeah.
We're gonna war dial the internet.
It's still running. Nmap's really slow, guys. I don't know if you noticed.
Well, you know, there are two things that you never want to either be in a position to say as a sysadmin or you never want to hear as a sysadmin. And one of them, of course, is, man, this is taking a long time. The other one, though, that's just as bad is, well, that completed way quicker than it was supposed to. That command completed way too fast.
Now, there have been some gentlemen that have actually scanned the entire internet, and they talk at DEF CON every once in a while. So that is a continuously going thing.
When you do that, do you like ascend and become like a different creature?
You know, yeah. I'm excited because DEF CON's coming up here pretty soon.
Ooh, discs.
And right,
That's Mr. Robot cosplay, right?
And so I'm going to be a speaker goon this year, and I'm going to be working track one. Ooh. And so I looked at the track one schedule, and Paul Vixie's one of the speakers on track one. So I'm like, ooh. God of DNS.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Cool.
So wait, if people were caught...
Are you domain name dropping?
Because if you are, I want to get a domain name.
You went in on that. If people are cosplaying at DEF CON, would you really notice?
Well, actually,
everybody's
you know what?
Dressed like Elliot.
Every once in a while, though, there's somebody who cosplays not as Mr. Robot, but as like...
Darlene?
Like a raver chick. Like beyond, yeah.
No, I know who you're talking about. The guy with the mask, the skull.
Talking about the girl with the mask from the first year.
There's a couple. That's a guy and a girl.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know that I saw him last year, but like you know, for a few years there, the first couple of years I went, like I saw him every year. Both of them usually together,
covering faces.
But then last year at Paris Bally's, this was somebody that somebody hired to come in. And like stand at the entrance and talk to people and take pictures. I mean, and she obviously looked like she did not belong in that crowd.
Hmm. So it was booth babes at DEF CON?
Kind of, yeah.
Unnecessary.
No thanks.
Nope.
Giving out free samples.
Show
of
us your code.
I don't remember what it was that she was pitching. You know, like what? I don't.
We're not against girls at DEF CON. We're just against. The you know, just only. What am I trying to say here?
You're trying to say that you're against the new Ghostbusters movie. I think.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm trying to say. Gamergate, Pro Wave, I don't even understand anymore. Yeah. What's net neutrality again? What?
Booth beefcake.
We're just saying. Yeah, there does not need to be a gratuitous flesh shown at DEF CON unless you just can't fit into your T-shirt.
The only gratuitous flesh that's shown at DEF CON are nerds that are wearing shirts that didn't fit them.
If you bend over to pick up your USB drive, that's okay. If you flash some flesh.
Shirts that used to fit, you know, several. Big Macs ago.
But the you gotta wear it because top. it's nerd cred.
Mm-hmm. Nerd crop top.
You know, you've got like a DEF CON 3 shirt. Even though you can't fit in it,
you
gotta wear it.
Even though you can't fit anywhere, you gotta wear it. Represent. That reminds me, I'm very excited that DEF CON is coming up.
Unless we'll be here in a month. And this month you'll be doing the show and
less than a month, yeah.
Yeah, I booked my flight
3 weeks
today.
Oh, I booked, two or three weeks ago.
I should have booked a couple of weeks ago, but I wasn't really... And you know, because of the trip to Canada, I have the option of going to Comic-Con. I've got pass for Comic-Con, and I went to DEF CON, and I thought I really need to like cut one of these because my bank account's bleeding out. So I looked at how much it was going to cost.
Yeah, but you're a dink, right?
Huh?
You're a dink.
A dink?
Yeah.
Dual income, no kids.
No kids.
Yeah, but the bird's expensive. The bird's like four children.
What does bird stand for?
The birds doubled in price because of the bird that adopted us. So now
send that bird to college. It's just so expensive to have a bird these days.
No, but I'm a little sad having to cut out that one, but I'm really – so I'm going to place extra emphasis on enjoying DEF CON. But, I mean, DEF CON was, you know, it was really just a no-brainer in terms of hotels and flights to get to Las Vegas as opposed to go to San Diego for Comic-Con, which is
You already booked a hotel for DEF CON like you did it last year?
Yeah, I did it last
– Okay.
So I got it cheap. I mean, you know, it's like a few hundred bucks for the whole thing. So, and then, but the plane ticket was a little higher than I wanted to pay, but I was waiting, trying to make my decision, and I decided not to book the flight until I got back from Canada, and I'm paying for that a little bit, unfortunately. But whatever. It'll be fun. You know, we'll have to have the obligatory, actually that's, yeah, we always do, DEF CON's always the first Friday of the month.
Yeah, so we will, oh.
Got the Geek Gathering in Vegas. Fly on out!
Yeah, that's lame. Because usually it works out.
No, it never does.
It never works out. Well, how do we always have the DEF CON Redux?
We have the DEF CON Redux
the month after.
Yeah, you're right.
We always announce that the Geek Gathering is, you know.
Now, next year, they're moving it up. So I want to say DEF CON hits late July. So we will be able to do the first Friday in August as the DEF CON Redux.
They're not going
to
cancel it?
Oh, it's canceled.
No, this is this year. Yeah, now DEF CON, I did hear, is canceled this year. So maybe we just go ahead and do the...
I think we should probably cancel the Geek Gathering out of respect.
You mean cancel it DEF CON style or cancel it for real?
This is going to get real confusing real fast.
I'm already so confused.
Is this the first cancel or the first cancel after the second cancel?
We canceled the cancellation.
Canceled, wink.
We should make Pete come to town and have Pete, Groovehouse, and Lee do the Geek Gathering.
Just show up until I'm intoxicated and take an Uber home.
Ubering home from... How much would it cost to Uber home from there?
I Ubered from my house in League City to the Galleria a couple of months ago, and it wasn't that bad. It was only like 30 or 40 bucks. I mean, you know, considering the distance, it wasn't like ridiculous. And there was a surge pricing, so it wasn't like, you know, crazy times. But yeah, it was, you know, reasonable. I was actually really impressed that, like, I walked outside and, you know... started up Uber and like there were like four or five Ubers in the immediate area out in the sticks in League City where I live, and you know, within 5 minutes the guy was pulling up and drove me down to the Galleria.
I'm a League City Uber driver. I never get a fare.
Instead, now you could try like Tesla, because there's a real discount since you only pay until it crosses the first truck that turns left in front of it.
It was actually Tesla related.
Oh, did we talk about that? The Tesla accident?
The guy that was killed?
Now, yeah.
Yeah.
Third one, I think.
I don't think we have yet.
There's been multiple, but...
What? There have been multiple ones?
Three so
I only
far.
Knew about one.
Well, there was...
Are they all self-driving accidents?
All autopilot related.
Okay, so wait, there was the dude who got killed.
There was one like a truck... Turned in front of him,
and it couldn't detect the white truck from the sky, the light-colored body of the truck.
Right.
The self-driving mechanism couldn't.
So it just kept driving straight.
Drove right into it.
Right, that was the guy who got killed. And then
he was apparently also watching a Harry Potter movie.
So the Florida Highway Patrol released a statement saying that the portable DVD player that was in the car was powered off at the time of the accident.
But Freebird was playing on the radio.
Well, all bets are off. Freebird's on.
So the data suggests the driver's hands weren't on the steering wheel. No force. Oh, that's cool. So they can actually detect that there's force on the steering wheel.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for over 2 minutes after AutoSteer was engaged. So it looks like all of them, they're saying that they've ignored alerts. They just weren't driving smartly. So it's kind of, you know,
you're supposed to pay attention, but, and supposed to take
control. So what were the other ones?
I didn't hear about the other ones.
There were two Model X accidents, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
One was like the driver, according to the driver on one of them, and I haven't read Tesla's statement on this, so I don't know what the official line is, but on one of them the driver said that like they were driving along with auto steer on and the car just like veered to the right, shot off the road and ran into a tree, like just like
I saw like several months ago I saw some videos where they were filming people letting them autopilot, and I remember one very specifically where the Tesla was on the on ramp and it was speeding up to get, you know, to merge into traffic, but it was still on the on-ramp part, and they're sitting there, and the guy's got his hands, it's close, but away from it,
Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
And it's going.
That's crazy.
And all of a sudden, it just took off to the right. But he grabbed it, and it didn't get off the road. Like, he grabbed it before it – I think it crossed the yellow line, but it was still on the shoulder.
Well, here's the thing. I haven't – not like an expert or whatever. I've had probably, I don't know, 500 miles total with the autopilot over 2 or 3 days several months ago. And it's good enough that it makes you think it's a lot better than it really is. It's good enough to be like, wow, this is amazing. I feel like we are literally living the Knight Rider fantasy now. And
I'm
going
to go in the back and make a sandwich.
Said that. He said the Model S driver saw that the actual accident coming. He said, yeah, I could have reacted sooner, but when the car slows down correctly 1,000 times, you trust to do it the next time. My bad. Actually said my bad.
I mean, it's kind of like it's so good and it works so well when it works that you think that it's like, infallible, and then
it's more like taking your hands off the handlebars of a bicycle.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
and the brakes and closing your eyes. I feel like it's pretty risky.
I mean, it's, you know, you wouldn't want to, and that's the thing. I mean, everybody is going to say, you know, that could never happen to me. I would never do that. I would never take my hands off the wheel of a car. These people that are doing these accidents are obviously, you know, idiots. Blah blah blah. But you get in there and you own this car and you drive with it, you know, like in the dude who was killed in the truck accident had his car for like at least a year, and he had a ton of videos on YouTube showing like exactly how the autopilot worked. He had posted like dozens of videos of his experience with it, and he had, like, if you go look at the dude's channel, he had videos of like, I'm going to test out what the autopilot does when I try to like merge into traffic or whatever. He had like just like dozens of videos. So he was, you know, clearly really experienced with the system and knew how it worked and how it was supposed to react. And I guess even if you're, you know, even if you're a very careful driver and a very savvy about your vehicle and the systems in it, and even if you're in the position like this guy was in, where you're, you know, you think you're, you know, totally in control of it and totally cognizant of what it's going to do under any circumstance, eventually you'll relax and let your guard down and take your hands off the wheel, and your car drives under a truck and decapitates you, like happened to that guy, or, you know, whatever.
Well, is it setting back the whole self-driving movement?
Well,
I mean, this is very bad black eye for
well,
the whole thing.
I mean,
we're setting back
isn't.
The robot revolution.
Wired ran a piece. Oh, it wasn't Wired. I'm sorry. It was Road and Track. Let me pull it up. Road and Track ran an op-ed yesterday. And the title of the op-ed was "Leave Tesla Alone," like the whole "Leave Britney Alone." And they have the Road and Track quotes the same stats that a lot of the other news outlets have quoted that Tesla has provided about the number of fatalities per miles driven. Excuse me, and it is for Tesla's fleet. And remember, all the cars are heavily instrumented, so they have. I mean, this isn't like average data or data gotten through, you know, skimming the information.
This is the actual data.
Like all of the data for real. 0.76 fatalities per 100 million miles driven. That's the rate of fatalities for Tesla vehicles in the U.S. And then the average, all vehicles averaged across. So Tesla's 0.76 fatalities per 100 million miles driven, and the average is 1.08 fatalities for 100 million miles driven. That's the, according to the National Highway and Traffic Safety Administration, that's the death rate on American roads as of 2014, which is the last year they say they have complete data on. So looking at it as a function of statistics, the cars are objectively safer. Now, at the same time, there's all other questions like, you know, there's a smaller sample size because there's fewer Teslas and blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, the data show, when averaged out, that the cars are objectively involved in fewer accidents and fewer fatalities. So is it a bad thing? I mean, I don't know. I don't think this is like, I mean, it's a big PR issue, obviously, because every news outlet in the country and every news outlet probably in the world is talking about it.
Well, I think on the plus side, none of these accidents have caused the death of a non Tesla driver. So yeah, I mean, I think it's a problem, obviously, but it would be really awful if a Tesla self drove itself over a child,
right? Yeah, or a pedestrian. That's when the robot cry is going to come out, I think. Although, I mean, yeah. Still, I would like to see the numbers on, like, how many, you know, a very specific model of Toyota killed people yesterday.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what we're kind of.
I don't know. I mean, it's
here.
It's lower. I mean, yeah. It's a weird area to approach. Like, plus also, you know, we're not talking about self-driving cars. It's kind of funny. People are talking about autopilot is like the wrong word. It's not autopilot because it's not fully autonomous.
Driver assist kind of.
It's actually a lot more like autopilot's actually a pretty accurate word, because what Tesla does is actually a lot like how aircraft autopilot works. It actually works a lot of the same way, like how an actual aircraft autopilot works, where you set sort of a course and a speed, and it watches out and makes sure you don't run into anything, sort of, but it doesn't necessarily navigate waypoints. Oh, I guess, you know, some will do that. Sophisticated ones will do that.
Tell you when you missed your turn.
Yeah.
Suggest places to stop.
But, I mean, it's in a lot of ways, we the media are overselling Tesla, because, you know, pick out any bunch of stories about the company, and you'll hear people talking about self-driving cars. Well, they're not self-driving. It's level 3 autonomy based on the National Transportation
Safety
whatever.
Board.
Yeah,
based Safety Administration.
Based on them, it's like a level 3 autopilot, so it does certain things, but it is not an autonomous car, and they're not selling it like that, even though the marketing is kind of fuzzy.
So you can't just, like, plug in your smartphone and tell it to go catch Pokemon?
No, that would be kind of awesome. I'm so lazy. I don't even
people
want
people are dying. Actually, I think Pokemon has probably killed more people. Pokemon Go is now probably injured more people,
killed more
than,
people
Tesla
than Tesla
has. Yeah. Like, there have been people. I don't know if Pete covered, if you covered this in the news, but, you know, an Australian man walked into an awful ravine. Someone found a dead body, not quite related. I don't think Pokemon Go killed the body, but the girl found the body while trying to find.
Was there a Pokemon on the body?
I think there might have been. That's one of the ones you don't want to mess with.
The Holocaust Museum in New York has issued a statement asking people to please not hunt Pokemon inside the Holocaust Museum.
That's a little
Museum.
Disrespectful. And then
it's
also,
like, come on, man.
Somewhere in Missouri, some people kind of figured it out where they were saying, like, hey, come get a Pokemon right here. And when they would come get a Pokemon, they would mug them. So, yeah.
Yes.
All right, well, that music tells us that we need to go see if we can find a Pokemon.
Wonderless fan, free Pokemon. Come on in.
Catch them all.
Free hugs. All right, so you've been listening to Technology Bites. We'll be back in a few minutes. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And Groovehouse is not here.
Cuckoo.
Wednesday, August 17th, two legends of Cuban music will take the stage at the House of Blues in downtown Houston. Mark your calendar for August 17th, when Buena Vista Social Club musicians Omara Portuando and Eliades Ochoa will perform at House of Blues for one night only. One of the original vocalists for Buena Vista Social Club, singer, dancer, actress, and world traveler Omara Portuando is part of a beloved musical scene in Cuba that produced a generation of innovators and pioneers. She is a legendary performer whose career as a vocalist has brought her worldwide success. She'll be joined at House of Blues by critically acclaimed Buena Vista Social Club guitar player and vocalist Eliades Ochoa. Don't miss Omara Portuando and Eliades Ochoa at the House of Blues August 17th in downtown Houston. For tickets, visit LiveNation.com. Presented in part by KPFT Houston.
Usted probablemente ha estado en su carro buscando por coberturas de noticias o buscando alguna música nueva. O a lo mejor usted estuvo en su casa cambiando el cuadrante buscando algo diferente. Su radio probablemente se haya quedado en KPFT y permanecido allí. Si usted es un nuevo radioescucha de esta estación, esta es la manera en que la radio de la comunidad trabaja. Nosotros dependemos de radioescuchas, no de comerciantes, para obtener dinero que usamos para la operación de nuestra estación. Nosotros tenemos campañas de donaciones pocas veces al año, donde nosotros le pedimos a usted que apoye nuestro trabajo con una donación monetaria. Usted ha venido dependiendo de nosotros, pero nosotros dependemos de usted. Vaya a la página de internet www.kpft.org para hacer su donación monetaria. Esta es libre de comerciales, patrocinada por Radio Escuchas. Radio Pacífica, KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. We now return to Technology Bites.
And we're back. Woo! What?
Woo. No, I'm just snapping to attention. Everyone, woo, all this energy and excitement.
Hello, friends.
We haven't talked to you in a while, friend. But all kinds of exciting things have happened over the break.
What happened?
I've already seen this part one.
I haven't seen it yet. No spoilers.
I haven't seen it either.
Is it about hacking? You ruined it for me.
He used Tracer T. I mean, the tools are just amazing.
Question for Flicted. You've seen episode one, yes?
Like the Star Wars?
No.
Mr. Robot?
Season two.
Star Wars. Season two, episode two. One.
The part one. Yes. Part one, but not part two.
The introduction of Jar Jar Hacker. No, you've seen the first episode of the second season of
Dot Jar.
Yeah, but Barrett saw it too, I think.
And yeah. Barrett. Without spoiling it, okay. Was it good? Does it hold promise? Does the second season look like it's going to hold? You remember how we talked about the first episode?
And we
are very hopeful and we weren't sure if it was going to live up to the hype.
You know, I can't. To me, it felt like watching part one was a lot of setup.
Yeah.
Or something. Now, I don't know if that'll happen in part two.
I think maybe that's
not.
Why they're doing back-to-back 2 hours, I'm assuming, because it would be bad just to have, you know, the first episode be nothing but exposition. So I think they're doing that exposition and then the punch with the second episode.
It was a lot of build-up and kind of not really revealing a whole lot, but just kind of saying some stuff has happened since you saw the last episode, and so we're kind of setting up what's happened. Yeah.
Not to be all, you know, Big Lebowski about it, but yeah, new stuff has come to light. And
yeah,
some
and I've heard
some
between
characters too.
Part one and part two, you know, when they start part two, it's like, wow, that was an amazing car chase we were just in, and that escape, wow. And you hacked, the way you hacked the entire traffic light system for the country so we could get away, wow.
There were definitely some weird things. I think like Gwyneth Paltrow might have been miscast in the second season of Mr. Robot, but you'll just have to watch and see.
Although Carrot Top.
I thought so when he's banging on that keyboard. The big keyboard. It was kind of funny. Like it was an oversized keyboard.
Well, and how Gallagher many different shows. Relatives are going to kiss before he realizes they're related? That's my big question.
Yeah.
I'm your aunt.
Yes, of course.
So the big reveal is when. Oh man,
Christian Slater turns out.
No,
to
no,
be
not
his
Christian
mother.
Slater. Rami Malek, whoever mm-hmm. his character, Elliot.
Elliot.
Yeah. It's whenever Elliot's sitting there like hacking on the keyboard, and he's like, "Is Carrot Top behind me?"
Carrot Top. This Carrot Top face. What's wrong with his face, man? Carrot Top.
He looks like
don't ask scary questions.
Why has his face got to be that way?
Well, here's one that is not spoilery, I don't think at all, but that I just wondered if anybody else saw it or if it's something if I'm just mistaken. The different times when Mr. Moneybags has appeared, has it been different people, different times in the mask?
I'm pretty sure.
Two different at least, I think.
Well,
usually
I know for sure it's been
but it's also been
two.
Elliot, too.
Because usually it was Slater. I know one
it's
time,
mom,
though,
yeah.
It was
it looked like it was Darlene to me.
Yeah. One time it was Darlene, I think, like when they broke into the camp, the TV in whatever that company is that he worked for.
I keep thinking Skybridge, but that's not their name. Safe, AllSafe.
AllSafe.
Yeah, when they break into AllSafe, you can kind of tell it's Darlene's voice through the vocoder.
Do they? Are we clear to discuss season one spoilers? Has that
sailed?
So my wife's been texting me along like this whole time here, and she says Mr. Robot is all Star Wars references. The dude kisses his sister. The other guy is the guy's dad. They have mythical powers. They're trying to take down the evil empire. She's like telling me this is all Star. The show is all basically Star Wars.
Who's Jar Jar? If this holds up, she needs.
No,
to
this is season two. That's where Jar Jar shows up.
Yes, yeah, season two is going to show up, or Jar Jar is going to show up in the next episode.
I think Jar Jar is going to be, that black guy from The Office that plays the keyboard.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. The American Office. American Office.
The American
Idris
Office.
Idris Elba?
He was in Hot Tub Time Machine. He was
Hot Tub Time Machine.
Oh, Daryl.
Yeah, but what's the actor's name in real life?
He's one of the people in this season.
Yeah, that's right. I do remember reading that. That's pretty cool.
Craig
Robinson,
I believe, is his name.
Yeah,
Craig Robinson.
He's awesome.
Yeah, I don't think he's capable of being a Jar Jar type character.
If he becomes Jar Jar, he's going to make Jar Jar awesome.
I think on the... Where was it? No, it was on the... When they were showing that thing where they ended up actually showing the entire part one, during that thing, they were talking about some of the new characters and, like, you know, who's playing what and what's going to happen. And so they actually mentioned him. And then they started joking about the fact that, like, when he was on set, he always had to have a keyboard with him. And so, you know, and so, like, they were like, yeah, he'd be sitting there and he'd be just, like, start playing the piano and be like, you're going to break into that server.
Is it time for a segment?
Oh, yeah, that's right. We have a show that is beyond Mr. Robot.
We love Mr. Robot. We're very excited about it.
Clearly.
DEF CON's coming up. If you're interested in hacker culture and you can't afford to go to DEF CON or can't justify a trip to Vegas, whatever, watch Mr. Robot. It's very interesting, and it does have some great commentary on the world we're living in terms of the digital age and how your information is out there.
I don't know if y'all looked at it, but Mr. Robot's done some pretty cool promotion stuff for this season. And so one of the things they did was, I think it was on Saturday or Friday, they started like 24 hours of Mr. Robot stuff. And so the first one was the United States, and it was Mr. Moneybags, and he said his spiel. And then they showed... like the first 2 minutes of episode one, which has already played now live on USA. But then it said, like, we'll be back in 2 hours. So 2 hours later, it was a different Mr. Moneybags, like with a different voice, but still vocoded. But they had a Canadian accent, and it was set in Canada. And then an hour later, they did another one, and everything was in Spanish, and it was set in Central or South America. And so at the end of each one of those, they would have a globe, and it would show Mr. Moneybag's face on the country where it was. And so they ended up doing 7 or 8 of them. There was like the U.S., Canada. It was 2 or 3 countries in Central and South America. Then it jumped over to Australia. Then it went to the Philippines, I think. And then it went to... I don't remember what
some other country place.
Yeah, and then it went to Hong Kong, and I think the last one it jumped to was England.
So, is there going to be any kind of media tie-in at DEF CON with Mr. Robot, or is DEF CON really not like if the company tried to do that, DEF CON would destroy them?
I don't know about at DEF CON, but a few months ago,
like Rami Malek could show up probably and just slay.
I would think so, but a few months ago they actually had Dark Tangent. And it was DEF CON sponsored.
In
like
New York, yeah.
They had like
the Tribeca Film Festival.
DEF CON Mr. Robot thing where they had people there showing people how to pick lock and how to do some other hacking stuff. And then they got them to Dark Tangent, and some other people were there, and they had a Q&A session with I think Sam Ismail and Rami Malek, and
that's
I don't remember who
on
else.
On YouTube, you can find that on YouTube. Yeah, the DEF CON channel, I think, has that out there.
Yeah.
Although some of it, 13. I think they're going too far. I've heard rumors that they're going to hack and ruin the Rio Olympics, just make it a total disaster.
I don't really think they'd be hacking.
Too late.
It's going to happen anyway, man.
To all 24 people outside of
computer
people from
viruses.
Rio.
We got real viruses.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mess. And a lot of athletes, a lot of like pro athletes, I guess not pro, amateur athletes, Olympic athletes, that aren't really playing for like any teams, they're dropping out of the game, citing Zika, citing things like that. So here's the question, though.
Okay.
IT people, they're sending a ton of IT staff. Yeah. So if you're recruited to go down there and go into Brazil, is it, can you, would you say like, hey, I don't want to go. I don't want to go down there and get, you know, shot and bitten and eaten.
I was watching, I was reading a, there was a huge, article. I'm trying to find where it was. It may have been on ESPN, but I don't think it was. There's a huge article about Michael Phelps, the swimmer, Michael Phelps. This is going to be his final Olympics. He's competing again.
It was a big
story about, you know, his life and his struggles with addiction and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And, like, it ended kind of on, you know, as these stories do, it ended on kind of an upbeat note talking about him and his wife and his daughter. And he has like, a young baby, and they're going to, like, be with him down in Rio and, like, watch him compete. And, like, all I could think of as I was finishing up this article is, dude, you're going to bring your wife and child to Rio with in the area where all this, like, sewage water is and whatever and, like, Zika or however you call it. And, like, why would you do that?
Why not just give that a pass and wait a couple years and go to the World Cup?
Well, you know, because
it's in Russia.
Yeah.
2018 World Cup's in Russia.
Because in Soviet Russia.
I love Rio. I worked down there for a while, you know, for a number of years. Not all at once, but, you know, go down every once in a while. And they're great people, but they're not going to get this together. there's so much corruption. Like, all the money that they've already given, like, all those construction companies.
It's only there because of, like, massive amounts of graft.
Yeah, and all that's already gone. Like, all the money to build the building, it's gone. It's just not there. It's, you know, it's, yeah. So we'll see what happens. But I don't know if that's the question. It's like, do we have an IT bill of rights? Can we say no? I don't want to go down.
Well, sure, you
here.
Can say no. Yeah, but, absolutely.
And you
say
can also
no.
say I will go find another job
yeah,
too.
That's right. Yeah. You can say no all day long.
So Brazil is literally trying to throw together the Olympics like a freshman doing a term paper after partying for their first semester.
It just seems like the past like
we're
three.
We're just gonna cram the morning up
as we cycle back between summer and winter because it's every 2 years now. It seems like the one in Beijing was like one level of like OMG messed up, and then like we went to Sochi and it's like, I don't know, Sochi seems pretty scary, there's some like really sketchy stuff going on here, and now we're doing this Rio thing. It's like, oh my god, now the last two look like they were, you know, great. And it's like, what, we're gonna have the Olympics
next I think is Liberia.
Somalia or South Sudan,
have it in like Democratic John Republic Jean-Jouin
militia riding in the
All right, well, maybe we should go to
the Oh, Earth's going to be here. We're going to have the Olympics in Houston. Came out of nowhere.
So happy news here.
Happy!
Yeah, Apple Watch was ranked the highest in smartwatch customer satisfaction by J.D. Power.
Of all three of them.
In a field of two watches, which both were Apple models, it ranked the highest.
Jobs' nephews really like the watches. That's what I heard. That's so cool.
Apple ranked highest among smartwatch manufacturers in customer satisfaction. Samsung finished in second, although it was first in the related fitness band category. The report measured overall satisfaction among 2,700 customers who purchased a smartwatch within the past year. Including these factors listed in order of importance: ease of use, comfort, battery life, phone features, price, strength, durability, display size, styling, appearance, reliability, apps available, and customer service. Apple got an 852 out of 1,000 and a 5 out of 5 Power Circle rating, compared to runner-up Samsung's 842, so that's not too far off,
That's like an extremely granular rating scale, out of 1,000.
Right. Except they got a 2 out of 5 Power Circle rating. So I don't know how that...
was a little less granular.
10 points really all fit right in the... all hit Samsung.
The
just
best
right
possible score of 1,874.321.
with a power rating of 21. No,
and Sony three golden pickles
rounded out the top five. So, in June 2015, research panel Wristly said overall customer satisfaction with the Apple Watch was 97%, which is what Tim Cook cited during the company's financial earnings call.
Well, they would not
their customer Wristly. Satisfaction has dropped slightly since then, but it has remained consistently high overall.
He said they got five green clovers, four blue diamonds.
They caught lucky.
And one animated.
Oh, and here's an East Texas story for Apple. A company called Somaltis LLC has filed a complaint against Apple yesterday in an Eastern Texas district court. So they're out rounding up the rubes to have them a jury, accusing the iPhone maker of infringing upon its 2010 patent related to complex battery technologies. The small Frisco, Texas-based firm also filed lawsuits against Asus, Lenovo, Samsung, Sony, and Toshiba over the same patent. Apparently, their patent is titled Integrated Battery Service System and seeks unspecified monetary damages or a running royalty on sales of infringing devices from the time of judgment going forward. This is from the complaint. Defendant sells, offers to sell, and/or uses telephones, including without limitation the iPhone 6S, for example, that infringe on at least claim one of the 386 patent. On information and belief, this is legal jargon, but here it is. The product includes a battery service system, including a processor, e.g. the A9 chip, which is configured to receive signals from connectors coupled to a battery, e.g. the product's rechargeable lithium-ion battery.
That sounds like basically everything in the universe infringes on this patent.
Nobody ever would have thought of that.
Specifically, it appears that the infringement claim at least partially relates to the iPhone's process of charging in fast charge mode until the battery reaches 80% capacity, then adjusting to trickle charge mode above 80%.
They should sue all the automakers for having gas tank indicators that light up when you get to a certain amount of gas.
Once they get their patent for a time machine approved, they're going to go back and sue Thomas Edison for putting electricity in batteries through wires with their the Somaltis generally fits the description of a patent troll, as it does not appear to provide any obvious products or services and lacks an easily identifiable online presence. Nevertheless, it has successfully reached out-of-court settlements with automakers like Ford and Nissan in the past in relation to the same particular patent.
You guys are all going to be in such trouble when my patent for RNA replication gets approved. I'm going to sue everybody. You're infringing. So much money. Stop being alive. You're infringing.
After he sues the plant for osmosis.
People would be screwed, but they won't be allowed to anymore.
That's right. Anyways,
what are you doing? Coagulating there. You need to bleed.
Nope, quit doing that.
My patent on liquids that change state is being violated.
All your
here.
Ice cubes belong to me now.
Yeah, and one, you'd have to be a method for making the liquid change state, because otherwise the infringing party is actually water, and water does not have deep pockets. You can't sue water. You'd want to sue a company that makes, like,
you could sue
I've
big
some
water.
Deep pockets of water. Big water. And some eddies. Some sinkholes.
I see what you did there.
Okay, well, now iPhone 7 rumors.
Yay, awesome. It's almost time for me to get a new phone.
There you go. There were some, apparently on Monday there were some iPhone 7 case images. That's not real great for radio. Then on Tuesday there were some pictures.
But they're triangle shaped.
That shows from the same source as the cases, showing what looks like the larger iPhone 7 Plus handset with a dual lens camera. So instead of the circular lens up in the upper left-hand corner, if you're looking at the back of the camera, it's got a more oblong-shaped lens, and
it's a bigger battery for sure. Now is what they're saying. Someone just released some stuff an hour or two ago and said that they were thinking that the battery's going to be bigger, but it's definitely bigger. It's 1960 milliamp hours compared to the 1715, and they're calling it short and stubby.
The additional iPhone 7 pictures offer a few more angles of a possibly fully assembled 4.7-inch device without revealing anything particularly new. So they showed that. The buttons look about the same. Let's see if there's any other news in this one. They don't really show the connectors on the ends. They show it from the sort of front, back, and side, but not the place where you could see if there's a smart connector. Which that's the other rumor. And then here's some other analysis. The back shows redesigned antenna lines. There's no, you know, if you look at like a iPhone 6 Plus or some of those, there's lines on it at the top and bottom for that are actually antenna lines. Apparently they're harder to see. They're smaller and sleeker on the picture. And they're more, the antenna lines are more right at the top and bottom of the device instead of crossing over in the middle. Let's see. And then this one was, I liked because it was that the headline this morning was more photos show off alleged lightning earpods for iPhone 7. You know, we're getting rid of the audio port. And these headphones they showed looked like garbage. They really did not look like Apple at all. And so the current headline is more photos show off alleged lightning earpods for iPhone 7 update : fake.
Nice.
And it just, they took what looked to me like a knockoff headset, and the pictures all never show all of the cords to the headphones. So all you'd have to do is take something with a lightning connector with a white cable attached to it
down there,
and have it come in alongside the other stuff, and then, oh, look, it's all one. Here's what it's going to look like.
You could do this. You could be famous, Pete.
You know, well, no, I mean, it's already been done. Whoever posted these fakes.
But you could do it again and be like, this time it's for real. Check this out.
And do it better.
Well, the thing is, you know, they'd have to look different than what they did before, and they'd have to look better. And so that would take like a lot more effort and time than probably I would be willing to.
A lot of these rumor sites will just run it. You could just basically do whatever you want and send them a picture and they'll be like, oh my God, thank you for the scoop. Just invent some story.
Put a round piece of glass on a brick and say,
you know, I don't want to
be headphones.
It's red. Just tell them I'm an executive with an electronics supply company and I was flying to China to, you know, talk about the prototyping for the new iPhone accessories that we're going to make next year. And I caught this cool spy picture while I was at the factory. And like, then you hold it up and there you go. You're boom, bona fides and everything.
I think I'd go more with like, I'm a West Coast street thug and I beat up this doughy nerd and these fell out of his ears.
He said he worked for Engadget. Well,
So I took a picture with my Android phone. And are these worth money? Anyways, in other news, the iOS 10 preview has started to be, you know, people have been going through it, and the just sort of quick summary, Ars Technica has a good write-up, you know, kind of the usual thoroughness going through it, but I think the key thing is the headline, iOS 10 preview, Apple goes back to ignoring the iPad in a wide-ranging update. So I guess the pendulum swings back and forth between Apple paying attention to the phone and paying attention to the iPad. And this one is an iPad, or is not an iPad, not the iPad's year for good changes. So I guess you'll be happier with your iPhone 7 than you might be with what happens when you put the update on your iPad. So keep an eye on that one. And you can read more about it if you're concerned. And finally, you know, it's been sort of quiet on the Mac malware front for a while, and then suddenly, in the wild, Mac backdoors are back. There's three new Mac malwares targeting webcams, passwords, and more. The first one, dubbed Eleanor by researchers at antivirus provider Bitdefender, is hidden inside EasyDocConverter, a malicious app that is, or at least was, available on a software download site called Mac Update. When double-clicked, EasyDoc silently installs a backdoor that provides remote access to a Mac's file system and webcam, making it possible for attackers to download files, install new apps, and watch users who are in front of an infected machine. Eleanor communicates with control servers over Tor to prevent them from being taken down or being used to identify the attackers. So, of course, the other piece with this is easy.converter doesn't do anything except install malware. So you don't even get to convert your files if you did it. So just remember that if you've been installing software to convert stuff. According to the technical leader, Tiberius Axinti, there's a name for somebody in the security anti-malware business. He's the technical leader of the Bitdefender anti-malware lab, said this type of malware is particularly dangerous as it's hard to detect and offers the attacker full control of the compromised system. Interestingly, Eleanor won't install itself if it detects a Mac is running Little Snitch, an application firewall that can monitor and control applications' access to the internet. This is according to the researchers from Malwarebytes. So may want to consider installing that one. The second malware package is known as KeyDNAP, I guess maybe. Its main function is to siphon passwords and cryptographic keys stored in a Mac's keychain feature. The developer openly lifted code from Keychain Dump, a proof-of-concept app that streamlines the exfiltration of keychain content when an attacker knows a Mac's password. Like Eleanor, it also uses Tor to contact its control and command servers. And then the new malicious app, the researchers from ESET, who disclosed the new app, discovered a clever trick KeyDNAP developers employ to increase the chances an end user will install the malware. Once it's unpacked from a zip file, the installation file contains a Mach0 executable that's disguised to look like a benign text document or image file. Immediately following the .txt or .jpg extension, the developers added a space character. As a result, double-clicking on the file will launch the file in a Mac's terminal window where it can then be executed. It's not clear right now how KeyDNAP is being distributed. Malicious files attached to spam messages or downloads from untrusted sites are two possibilities. The third one is technically classified as adware because it currently does nothing more than inject a barrage of pop-up ads on an infected machine. And technically, the recently spotted Purit is a variant of an app first spotted earlier this year. Still, Purit installs PIRRIT, installs a backdoor that gives it the power to do pretty much anything its developers want. Attackers could have used the capabilities built into OS X Purit to install a keylogger and steal your login credentials or make off with your company's intellectual property, among many other bad outcomes, said Amit Serper, a researcher with Cyber Reason, in a report published today. Even Macs are vulnerable to threats. He went on to say that a removal script released in April recently stopped working because the adware had mutated. Code contained in the new variant led him to believe it was developed by someone at Targeting Edge, an Israeli marketing company. So now we're getting malware from marketers. Let's see. None of the newly disclosed backdoors are signed by Apple trusted signing certificates. That means that people who use the default security settings on Mac OS X are automatically protected thanks to a security feature known as Gatekeeper. Basically, that's a setting on your Mac where it says that you won't sign software that isn't signed by the Apple Store. And after seeing this, then if you've disabled it, you may want to think about re-enabling it and dealing with any exceptions you want to do on a case by case basis, as opposed to leaving it off. So, I mean, I guess it's nice that there's only the three new ones are a big enough deal that there can be news about it without having to, as opposed to on Windows where it's new exploits are not particularly newsworthy unless they're like 20-year-old printer exploits. So there's that.
All right. So that's all the Apple rumors. Anything
all
else?
The Apple news.
All the Apple news that's fit to bite. Shop. La, 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 la. All right. So, yeah. I'm still undecided whether I like the giant form factor of the 6 Plus.
Yeah, that's why I was kind of curious, because the 7's going to go back. It sounds like it's going to go back down in size a little bit. So yes. Are you going to upgrade and go down the path no matter what? just because it's newer technology?
I mean, I will say this. This is the thing that makes me kind of sick to my stomach, because I have found myself on my vacations now, out, you know, relegating some of my photography off to the phone.
Whoa. Heresy.
Because, you know, it does a great job, and it takes, I mean, it's not like, it's not fine art necessarily, photos. I still have to bring my gear to do that, but in terms of documenting the trip, I'm getting really, really good results from the phone. So I'm always interested to see if the next phone is going to have a better setup for the camera. And they do tend to improve that technology with each release of the phone. So every time, you know, the next phone comes out, I'm interested in the camera in it. So what I'll be looking for when the iPhone 7 comes out is to see what advances they make in terms of the photographic capabilities of the device. And I also like the fact that storage is going through the roof. I bought the 128 gig one. So, I mean, I don't feel like I'm restricted. I can take all the photos I want. I've got plenty of room and I have that archive available to me. And what I've done too, one of the things, and this is something that maybe people who do take a lot of photos with their phone might be interested in. If you download the Flickr app for your phone, and it's available for Android or the iPhone, you sign up for a Flickr account, the you get a terabyte of storage, and the phone can be set to automatically upload your photos to your Flickr account and set them as private automatically.
Is that the free Flickr account?
It's free.
A terabyte's that's a nice amount of storage.
Yeah. So you can upload your photos, all your photos. And you can set it to only do it on Wi-Fi so you're not chewing up your data plan. So whenever I get near Wi-Fi, my phone looks and sees if I have any images that I've taken on my phone and uploads them. And I've got all of my archive of images there pretty much in chronological order. No identifying information about, you know, I mean, it's got the, it on Flickr too, it does save the GPS data. So you have the geolocation, right. So you can see where the photo was taken.
I fully expect Yahoo to screw this up at some point in the future and totally break it and make it not working.
It's unfortunate that Yahoo owns Flickr. I mean, I remember meeting the people involved, with Flickr at one of the first South by Southwest Interactives way back when, with some friends. We went up there because this whole social media thing was kind of taken off. But if you're looking for a good solution for just backing up your photos and having access to them, because what's cool too is that you can then go to Flickr, you can change the privacy setting on a photo, you can put information on it, you can build albums, photo albums. So like, you know, if you go on a trip, you could take all those photos and throw them in an album and you have them, you could share that with other people. So it's a really nice thing to have, and all your photos are just there for you.
I'll be there for you. Hmm. Like that? Are they there for you like that?
They're not that friendly.
I see what you did.
They're not TV's friends.
Boop. All right, why don't you fire us off some Try, Buy, or Fry?
In the geek world, we hear about new gadgets and gizmos every day. But can they stand a dip in the snart tank?
So, Apple is, and this isn't the Try, Buy, or Fry item, but it does lead in. Apple is recruiting developers for a reality TV show for Apple TV called Planet of the Apps. And if that makes you want to see the movie Planet of the Apes, then you're in luck, because it is going to be in theaters this month in many places across the country, definitely including Houston.
Why?
And San Antonio.
The original one?
Yeah, the 1968 masterpiece.
Why? Why are, I mean, cool, but why?
Yeah, why? Why?
No one watches TV on Sunday mornings anymore.
Fathom Events, Turner Classic Movies, and 20th Century Fox invite you to return to the out of this world madhouse when the sci-fi classic Planet of the Apes from 1968 crash lands in select cinemas nationwide for a special two-day event on Sunday, July 24th and Wednesday, July 27th. So you'd have to do it on a Sunday if you're part of the show.
Let me see.
But, yeah, the one with Charlton Heston and Roddy McDowell. You blew it all up.
Damn you! Yes.
You damn, get your hands off me, you damn dirty ape.
Why? I mean, why? Is it the anniversary?
It's the 48th anniversary.
So it's not weird a. It's number, not,
yeah. Think they'd kind of hang off for two more years and then do the big 50th.
Do they know something we don't know?
They want to show it before.
To appease our new ape overlords.
See, we predicted it would happen. I, for one, welcome our new ape overlords. Now, why? I don't know why.
Well, but I'm still on asking, Team Robot.
I think maybe this is just the beginning. I mean, because they've done some other things where they've shown some classic movies back in theaters. Didn't they bring? They recently brought back like Raiders of the Lost Ark and showed that in the theaters.
They did Alien a few years ago.
Yeah, they do that now and again, and I think. Maybe with this whole reboot phenomenon, instead of, you know, having a new Ghostbusters movie, maybe they re-release the original Ghostbusters movie in the theaters. So maybe like they're kind of capitalizing on that nostalgia feeling, but just, hey, we've already got this movie. It's already made. Let's do this.
They should do all of them. So were there like four or five? Were there five?
Didn't they do a marathon of
Beneath the Planet of the Apes, Escape from the Planet of the Apes?
I will Wikipedia to the rescue. Planet of the Apes, Planet of the Apes, Beneath the Planet of the Apes, Escape from the Planet of the Apes, Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, Battle for the Planet of the Apes,
and Tootsie.
Planet of the Apes 7, Electric Boogaloo.
That was one of the best ones, believe it or not.
Then there was the Star Wars Planet of the Apes crossover film.
Revenge of Charlton Heston.
Revenge of the Simps. Revenge of the Simians.
Planet of the Apes 7, the Omega Man.
Wasn't there a Planet of the Apes TV series for a while in the 70s?
Maybe.
There was. Yeah, there sure was. Yeah.
Really?
Two television series. There was Planet of the Apes TV series, and there was a return to the Planet of the Apes TV series.
Well, then they did. So there was also
73,
the...
73, yeah.
There was the comedy they did in 2001, Marky Mark Meets the Planet of the Apes. And that was
Marky Mark
good.
And the AP Bunch. Yeah, that wasn't any good.
Oh, yeah, I remember this horrible
Marky
series.
Mark and the Monkey Bunch.
Yeah, that's better. So much better.
Oh, that wins. Show's over. Just pack it up and go home now.
All right, we got mics. We can all drop them.
Just drop it.
And here's so other media. ABC has decided on their streaming approach. And rather than do a subscription service, they're going to just offer new and old content for free.
Oh, I guess that's better than just making you just give them your credit card and not show you anything ever, which is some of the other ones have chosen to do.
Yeah, so they've opted for free on-demand content over heading down the same subscription route its competitors have chosen, like NBC's CISO comedy offering and CBS All Access. The network is launching digital shorts under the ABC lowercase d moniker and includes new shows like Boondoggle, starring Ty Burrell from Modern Family, and comedian Ilse Schlesinger's Forever 31. There's currently 40 additional series coming down the pipeline that will eventually be added to the mix with full seasons of shows like Eight Simple Rules, My So-Called Life, The Neighbors, and Ugly Betty being added in the meantime. If you're looking for a new source for classic shows and new ones going forward, this might be a good bet. So, you know, nice to see one that's not that has figured out that maybe it would just be a big, that it probably would be worse for them to try and charge people for it. And just try and get an audience first. And then a couple new kind of interesting. I've watched, you know, my kids watch like Twitch and watch YouTubers who play different games. And one of the things that's been striking, you know, mostly my experience is I walk through the living room and they're watching something on TV and I see whatever it is. There's some really interesting approaches to video games out there that are, you know, imaginative and unique, where it looks like a storybook, or where the characters are all in like they're like shadow silhouettes and stuff like that. This one kind of fits in with it. There's this the headline I think kind of sums it up well. It says this totally accurate battle simulator might be the most ridiculous video game ever. And what it is, instead of trying to be realistic and have like real human beings, you know, slashing and hacking each other in, you know, hand-to-hand combat, it's armies fighting battles. The characters are kind of made out of like, look like they're made out of putty. And so there's red putty and blue putty.
I'm trying to sign up for the alpha, and their stupid website keeps throwing a 403 forbidden error.
What's
on the
game called again?
Totally.
Basically.
Go ahead.
Let's see.
It's called Totally Accurate Battle Simulator.
Which that is going to tell you it's probably not totally accurate, but the deal is that the two armies are armed with medieval weapons, and then they just storm at each other to see which army will win, and presumably which weapon selected is superior. They said it's like a twisted version of rock, paper, scissors, only way more fun. And there is a video if you follow the
it looks
article.
Awesome. It looks hilariously terrible.
Yeah, which it's kind of fun. I mean, you don't have to. There's not. I'm guessing there's not large scale strategy here. I guess other than picking your weapons and stuff.
Right, well, I can't sign up. It's like the, I can't sign up for
like,
their alpha.
It's like the tic tac toe of combat strategy games.
I can't sign up for their alpha, but I can exercise the nuclear option, which is sending them an email from my work address and being like,
oh.
"Can you just give me a copy, please?"
Dun, 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 dun. Now, here, we have had a real shortage of crappy, bizarre technology on Try, Buy, or Fry. ones that where you wonder if the fry will be the malfunctioning of the dicey device that you got. Well, this time I found a good one. It's from Thanko, which has got to be anything
not
from
to
a
be
company
confused with
Thanko,
right?
Not to be confused with what?
Funko.
Yeah. No, Thanko has armpit air conditioners. We've all been there during the hot and muggy summer months, afraid to raise an arm to hail a cab or reach for a subway handle for fear of revealing our sweat-soaked armpits. Until now, the solution was to simply never leave your home. Why do you think blogging was invented? But Thanko's armpit coolers will let you step outside with confidence. It's a little box with a fan inside it, and you clip it on the inside of your arm, pointing the blowing end of it towards your armpit. It's powered by two AAA batteries each or a USB connection to a laptop or other power source. So you get that great USB cable running to your armpit look. The coolers will continuously run from 5 to 9 hours, depending on which of the three intensity settings you use. Rumor has it that the highest intensity is called Houston. Houston Summer. You can get a pair of them, one for each armpit, for under $40. And while not completely invisible while worn on each arm, no one would dare mock you for fear of revealing the sweat stains under their own arms.
Fairly sure those would get shorted out in Houston in the first minutes of use.
Oh, if you really sweated, we never thought anybody could sweat enough to hurt themselves with these. And I'll also, this just in, the idiots out of Frisco, the patent trolls, are going to sue them because the battery is controlled by a switch-type device in a plastic housing. In other battery operated stuff, if you're going to go, nobody plays golf anymore, but if you were going to play golf and you didn't feel like spending an obscene amount of money on your golf clubs was not quite enough to be impressive, Mercedes-Benz now has a like super premium golf cart. If you could suspend your skepticism, the Mercedes-Benz Style Edition Garia golf car makes a compelling case for premium golfing. It has fancy wheels and a carbon fiber roof, and Mercedes describes it as sporty and well-balanced. The rear spoiler on it doubles as a golf bag holder, of course. It has a 10.1-inch touchscreen. That keeps tabs on your range. It can go up to 50 miles. You can select sport and eco mode, and it displays a course map and scorecard, of course. Mini fridge under the leather seat keeps your beers cold, and cup holders keep them from toppling when you tromp on it. What you don't get, though, even though this is a Mercedes, it doesn't get the three-pointed star, their logo. It gets the logo of Garia, I guess, the golf cart manufacturer that Mercedes worked with.
Does it come with a driver, so you don't have to actually do any of that boring driving?
Or a chipper or a putter.
That's right. And a caddy. It comes with a driver and a caddy.
I've heard it actually can there's the Trump edition will actually just shoot the golf balls from the cart into the cup and score you with a one on every hole.
Going, I want to go back to your totally accurate battle simulation.
Jay's entranced.
They also have a game called Cluster Truck.
Oh, okay. So those people that they're very that's creative. That
and air brawl.
Cluster Truck. It's sort of a first person game, and you can like run and jump on top of trucks. They're very abstracted. And the whole goal is for you to ride the tops of these trucks.
Let me read it.
Mispronounce it when you say it.
The point of the game is to reach the end of each level without falling off trucks driven by terrible drivers. Playing in the campaign mode will take the player on a Hollywood-esque journey through many different worlds where everything tries to kill them.
But it's very... If you look at Cluster Truck or this other... It's very imaginative. You do have to have skills to make it work and to succeed in it, but it's also funny. It sort of melds the simplicity of the old kind of 8-bit gaming with some of the sophistication of modern platforms.
Air Brawl provides interesting and creative ways for the player to destroy their enemies. Instead of just damage, weapons have many different attributes they can inflict on their target. Some weapons slow the enemy, some disable their steering, and some damage them over time. These are just a few.
I love these kind of games, though. They're like almost like wind-up toys where you can like sort of set them up and then watch them do
clack,
amazing
clack, clack,
things.
Clack, clack, goes the monkey.
Like there used to be a game, similar idea. It may have been by these guys.
Football?
This was 10 years ago. Oh. No, it was called Truck Dismount, and it was basically like a big polygon truck, and you could... you could take a little like person, like a little polygon stick figure guy, and move him to various points on the truck, like in the cabin or on top of the trailer, or there were like five or six places you could stick him, and then you could like tell the truck that like you wanted to dial the power to a certain area, or, like to a certain amount of power of the truck, and you could like have a certain amount of like steering on the truck, and then you hit the go button and the truck would start moving forward and bounce around and run into a wall, and the guy would fall off. And the score that you got was based on how much damage was done to the little stick figure. So, like, you get it to where, like, the truck runs him over or something, or he flies off and then is crushed beneath the truck, you would get, like, way more points.
Oh, more you got hurt.
Yeah, the more the guy gets messed up, the more points you got.
If you like games like that, then one that you should Google is called Happy Wheels. And what Happy Wheels is a violent, horribly violent game where you, as various characters and for various levels, you ride a bicycle. Your avatar rides a bicycle, and it does things like you ride over like soda pop bottles that then, break as you drive right across them. So you have to keep going fast or they break so far that you fall to your death. And they have things where you have to like jump into a you jump into an area where if you fall without hitting the knives on the sides of the hole, and if you hit the ground and die from hitting the ground, then you successfully completed the level. But if you get cut up, then you lose. It's funnier than it sounds describing it, but it is very amusing. And often you have a little child in a kid's seat on the back of your bicycle too, and so you get extra points if they survive to the end of the run, which they usually don't. But it actually, if you play it, it's if you're a sarcastic gamer, you will find many hours of terrible amusement playing Happy Wheels.
I like meaningless games like that. It reminds me of the old Vibration football game I had when I was a kid.
When I was really little, I always thought that actually worked, or it was magic somehow, and I never understood how the thing worked, and I realized now it was really just luck, and it didn't actually work at all. Am I correct?
But the quarterback had an arm that moved. You could make passes.
And then if it got close enough to your character, then they caught it.
No, it wasn't called a character. That's a video game.
Player.
Your player.
If it got close enough to your player, then you could put it in his hand. But the thing is, a lot of times, you know, they operate based on two metal, separated metal plates on underneath each player on the front and the back. And it was a metal plate that vibrated. And so, you know, the plates would tilt a little bit so it'd go forward. And you could kind of, like, rotate the plate a little bit to get players to turn. So you could, like, try to make intricate plays where people were blocking and the runner, like, ran down the middle and...
Wow.
But mostly,
did you have much experience doing this? Were you good at it?
I kind of did, just because my dad had one, and so it was at my grandparents' house. And so when we were there, we were kind of captive for
I'm envisioning days. Like this toy that has these figurines on it that are made of lead, and they have like the 1930s style football helmets on, and the toy like gives you cancer when you touch it.
No, it is just a vibrating thing. I could never get them to do anything except go to the outside and just fall
off.
Well,
and a lot of times, you kind of just set them up, and then you don't know what's going to happen. You know, you turn it on, and like, you know, Your like wide receivers going in a circle, and one guy goes off to the sidelines and just running into the sidelines.
Yeah, often it was kind of like watching 4-year-olds play soccer, where there's this cluster of individuals at a part of the field for no reason. The ball's
good
over.
Outcome, you're doing a good job. Outcome is totally not dependent upon input; just sort of happens.
And people are on the sides yelling a lot, and nothing really changes the result.
You idiot! What are you? You're going the wrong way.
Jay's playing a video of this, but it says, is that AFL or whatever? That's not real football.
That's a game. Of course, it's not real.
Arena football.
He's stuck. States fans.
And finally, on Try by or Fry, just to from a completionist standpoint, this one, you know, that there's development by Stack Overflow, and but. Here's something new you can add that you can get off of GitHub that actually is really kind of cool. And it'd be sort of, if you're the person who's oriented that way, it might be awesome to download this and look at it. It is the Apollo guidance computer code for Apollo 11.
Didn't somebody use that to hack the Apollo program?
Yeah, we're working on it.
Although the code for the MIT design system has long been available to interested researchers, it's never been this easy to get at.
It's
been out there since 2003. A pilot scanned it and put it out there.
Very easily gettable if you want to go get it, but the headline here is that it's in GitHub. So if you are familiar with the GitHub system and the GitHub interface, this makes it easy to like kind of grep through and look at in a way that you might be familiar with rather than having to deal with the plain text.
Apparently Quartz has an excellent, thorough breakdown of it. Reddit has already taken a look under the hood and uncovered some of the best tidbits. For one, you'll find burn baby burn master ignition routine.agc in there. In another spot, you can see a note about trashy little subroutines. So just like a lot of programs, the comments are kind of a cool part of the routine names.
I mean, you could talk about there's you got to look at this in the context of the time, and this is we only have a couple of minutes left. I don't
trigger
want to
lights
show,
on Soundstage 4.
It's pretty much assembly is what they're writing. It's machine language.
It's assembly. It's machine language, and you have to imagine the Apollo guidance computer not really as a general purpose computer, but more of a very sophisticated embedded controller.
It's not much faster than actually an Arduino. Like if you've gotten a hold of an Arduino, it might be a little bit slower than an Arduino.
But slower. But the difference is that the AGC is it doesn't have a hardware abstraction layer. It has fixed peripherals that it communicates with on
fixed
apparently
ways. It has a Git client.
It does now. The program flow is extremely regulated and whatever. But when you do look through the source code, first of all, it's really well documented, even though the computing itself is done in an interesting and funky way. If you go, there's actually a great book by a fellow named O'Brien, O-B-R-E-I-N, on Amazon called The Apollo Guidance Computer Principles and I think it's called Principles and Theory of Operation. It's an excellent book that breaks down over about 800 pages, the internals of the thing. And the routines that those guys have found, that Reddit's found, like Burn Baby and a couple of the other ones, are not even the best ones, because I've been through this whole book. I've read it a bunch of times. probably the best is the the routine that's called if the computer encounters a if the computer encounters a error that can be recovered from but requires a reboot, the routine that calls that reboot is called P00DOO, which you pronounce as Poodoo. And it's called that because P00 is the idle program, and the program triggers P00 as the major mode. But it's also called that because if that routine ever is triggered in flight, everybody is
you're
going to immediately fill their pants.
Yeah.
Because you never want that to happen. It's and I could talk about the Apollo Guidance. We could do 2 hours on the Apollo Guidance computer if you want some brilliant embedded controller.
I wouldn't mind finding that book. I'm gonna have to go track that
let
down.
Me I'll email you the actual one. It's great, especially if you're into programming, and you can, because it breaks down how the thing works from a standpoint of, from a kind of a traditional computer science standpoint, and also from an operations standpoint. So you get sort of the functional overview, and then not just abstract descriptions of how it works, but details of the how and the why, and then examples of during the mission, this, blah, 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 blah. And it talks about the program flow
Whoa.
Control, lots of stuff.
It's just running at barely over 2 megahertz.
But again,
the was running.
Not
yeah.
a general purpose computer,
yeah.
and a sophisticated embedded systems controller with tightly regulated program flow. In this case, the hardware design was driven by the requirements,
mm-hmm.
and the requirements were relatively. The computing and stuff requirements were relatively stable, but I mean it did stuff like it couldn't do vector math. So, but vector math is a requirement for maintaining a complex state vector of a spacecraft in flight. So it had a major running program called the Interpreter that was actually sort of a very incredibly sophisticated virtual machine that used the hardware instructions to construct a fake virtual machine that could do vector math. I mean, you know, just amazing stuff that they did. Probably because the people designing it were. It's one thing to design an embedded system that does all this stuff today with decades of computer science behind you. It's another thing to do it in the mid-1960s where you don't have off-the-shelf libraries to take your code out of. You have to make this up as you go along.
Everything.
You have to make everything up. And most of the principles that were set forth in designing the executive and the interpreter and the basics of the AGC actually form the basis of modern real-time computing.
Only 34 instructions, yeah. On the
and when it, no. when it did trash collection, it was like literal trash collection.
Yeah. You can get underneath it.
Were there subroutines in the software that told it when to trigger the lights on the soundstage?
Yes, that's
now they people have actually gone in and started writing code and updating this code. Like, for instance, someone added like a stir the tanks piece where they could actually come in and, you know, come in and do the save. And then if you've got an FPGA or like a field programmable gate array, you can actually go and get the Apollo 11 AGC and actually mock it up. You can run "quote unquote," the real hardware on another chip, which is kind
well, there,
neat.
And there's been the source code has been out, like you said, for many years, and there are tons of virtual AGCs you can download and run. Interestingly enough, you can actually emulate it on modern hardware without that much problem. It's pretty cool.
Well, even though they were doing it on the fly, that's always in software. There's two lines in it that where it says the comment is temporary. I hope.
It's never temporary. All
temporary code, and it ended up in there and ended up being used.
To the moon, Alice.
All right. Well, that music signals it into another exciting and informative episode of Technology Bites.
She's back.
We're Yay! Really glad you could tune in. I'm glad to be back, sort of. You know, it's not
really glad to be back.
You know, by the end of a good vacation, if you're ready to come home, it's a sign that you had a good time. We wore ourselves out. We had a great time, but it's good to get back to, you know, a steady diet of routine and back to what's going on here. Tune in next week for more Technology Bites.
No, we're preempted.
No, hey.
Next week.
I was testing you. Good catch. No, in fact, thank you for reminding me. We are preempted next week, so... Well, I'm not quite back to my routine.
I did a Barrett time for next week.
Sure.
All right. Hour long, Mr. Robot, right?
Yeah. Right. All right. Well, go home and check out your DVRs. You should have 2 hours of Mr. Robot waiting for you, unless you were watching it without listening to us.
Shame.
This has been another episode of Technology Bites. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Link.
And Groovehouse, come back.
If you've ever wanted to go to New York for dinner and a show with Amy Goodman of Democracy Now!, here's another chance to do it. Our raffle is underway now until August 2nd. For $20 per ticket, you'll be entered into a raffle to see a taping of Democracy Now!. Airfare is included for the winner. So get your tickets online at kpft.org. Proceeds from the raffle go towards our fundraising goals for the summer, so you'll be supporting KPFT, and maybe you'll win the most affordable vacation you've ever taken. Raffle tickets are $20 for one ticket and $100 for six. The drawing is on Tuesday, August 2nd at 4 p.m. Good luck from KPFT Houston.
Why donate your car to KPFT? You can free up space in your garage, you can avoid the hassles of selling your car, there's no need to pay hefty car repair bills, and you turn that unwanted car into an IRS tax deduction. In addition, you're helping to make the Houston area better with unique arts, music, and culture. You help keep options on the airwaves. Best of all, making a car donation is easy and always free. Just call 1-855-573-8227 or visit kpft.org to donate your old vehicle to support KPFT. Again, that number is 1-855-KPFT-CAR. Thanks for your help. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.